Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening this morning. We're also pleased to have back on the program Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic, and he's on the program every month. It's always on a Thursday. A long, long time ago, we started thinking about those topics we thought people would probably have questions about all the time, and children's health was one of them. So we built the program into the schedule so that you'd have this regular opportunity to talk with a pediatrician. Anything that's on your mind can be about health, can be about behavior, about developmental issues, the sorts of things you could talk about with your own pediatrician. Well, that's just all welcome here. All you got to do is pick up the telephone and dial the number, and you can talk with Dr. Bocek here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. Good anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. And again, local 833-WILL. That's what you get when you match the letters and the numbers, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to be here. I do love this weather because we seeded last fall, but winter came too early for it to sprout, so this rain is just nice. You know, it doesn't wash out. It just...
Well, that's good. I'm glad to meet somebody who's happy about the weather. Well, actually, I guess it's not too bad. We just have to say, you know, we know that there will be spring. Winter, sooner or later, when it makes up its mind to be done, will be done. And, you know, maybe we'll have two or three really nice weeks before it turns to be really muggy, which is pretty much the way it works around here.
Then spring comes and everything blooms. We can talk about allergies.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, we have someone ready to go here. Let's talk with them. In Champaign, line one.
Hi there, Dr. Bocek.
Good morning.
I have a 6.5-year-old girl who has been sniffing really for the past 8 or 9 months now. And she went through several rounds of allergy tests because that's what we thought it was. And absolutely no results to any allergy tests. They just think she's not an allergic person.
Okay.
And also she is having stomach pains, which I'm thinking might be from sniffing all the time, but I'm not sure. So I'm wondering, they referred her to an ear, nose, and throat person, and now we have to wait a couple of months to see that specialist. And I'm just wondering if this calls to mind any other possibilities for you, because no one has really discussed with me what the other possibilities could be.
She breathes okay. She doesn't snore at night.
She does snore a lot.
She does snore a lot.
I've always said she has slightly enlarged tonsils.
Okay. Tonsils aren't the problem. Maybe the adenoids. Maybe that she's got upper airway obstruction. From enlarged adenoids, or that I may have told a little bit of an untruth there. With upper airway obstruction, there's not enough airway through the nose, not enough space through the nose, and it may be a muscular problem that's relaxing the roof of the palate, the nasal pharynx back there that's collapsing down. But what happens is you take out the adenoids and you make space, because the adenoids seem to be somewhat expendable, let's say.
Uh-huh.
So if she snores loudly at night.
Yeah.
Does she have apneic pauses?
Those I've not noticed.
Okay. Actually. Does she snore every night?
I don't know if it's every night, actually.
Okay. Is it obnoxious? Can you hear her three rooms down?
It's loud.
Okay. I'd go on the waiting list with ear, nose, and throat and see if you couldn't get an earlier appointment. It may be that she just got upper airway obstruction. Is she messy to sit by at the dinner table? She tend to chew with her mouth open because she needs to breathe and chew at the same time?
Not anything I've noticed.
Okay.
Possible.
How is she doing in school?
Oh, she is super.
Okay.
Great A, no problem.
Okay, she gets up bright and bouncy in the morning?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, not tired or crabby. No. So that's certainly a possibility. There's another thing called vasomotor rhinitis that I don't think anybody understands at all. And these people act like they're allergic. Their nose is constantly stuffy. Often they'll have some clear rhinorrhea, clear runniness to the nose. and it's not allergic. We don't know what it is. That's why we call it vasomotor rhinitis. It's a big, long term that says, boy, we're dumb. We don't know what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And they don't respond to antihistamines. They don't respond to decongestants.
It doesn't respond to any of the allergy medicine.
Yeah. Often what they'll respond to or what will help somewhat is just humidification. And some of the saline nose drops like Ocean or Nasal and those sorts of things used as often as needed. And the saline nose drops, again, unlike the decongestant nose drops, you can use as many times a day as you want. You can use for as long as you want.
Well, right now they have her on a steroid nose drop.
Okay.
I can't tell if it helps at all.
That seems to work well for if there's an inflammatory component. The steroids are anti-inflammatory, so it'll seem to work well for that. It doesn't seem to work as well for the vasomotor rhinitis. The steroid nose sprays probably take about a week before you see much effect. And if you've been on it longer
we've been on it.
Okay. You're probably not going to see much. So I think you might try some nasal saline. Mm-hmm. You might try some Vaseline in the nose, and she can insert it herself. Just get some Vaseline on the tip of her little finger and just put it in the front part, the vestibule, we call it, of the nostril. And as she breathes, it'll melt, and the inhalations will tend to spread it back. So it's just kind of like hand lotion for the inside of the nose, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And you might try that.
So it's sort of a dry nose.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, does she drip much? Does she drain much?
Not a drip.
Yeah, does she have a runny nose?
It's more that she's sniffing.
Just
all the
sniffing.
Time than it is actually runny.
Boy, I'd sure try moisturizer then.
That sounds more like the moisturizer.
Yeah. How's her voice? Is her voice normal, or does she tend to have hyponasal speech, or what we call nasal speech?
I think it's normal.
Okay. The other thing you'd think of in a situation like this, I suppose, would be a polyp or something like that in the nose, abnormal growth in the nose, which, again, ear, nose, and throat will help out with that, which is not very likely.
Right. Okay.
Not very likely, because what those things will do is they'll completely obstruct at least usually one side.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll complain that, you know, I just can't absolutely breathe out of that side of my nose.
You know, I guess what started to worry me the last couple of months is she's just complaining more and more about her stomach, which made me start to think about systemic things like cancer.
Yeah.
Causing both.
You know, very, very doubtful. Where is her stomach pain? Where does she localize it to?
It's kind of on top, and she says it's like a fist turning
okay.
in her stomach. You know, and the doctor told me to try antacids and crackers. And, you know, she doesn't really eat a lot. But they don't seem to help that much.
Yeah. How does her stomach function? What's her appetite like? What are her bowel movements like and all that?
She seems to be pretty regular bowel movements.
Okay.
Her appetite, I think, is on the low side. And she's,
okay.
she has been not gaining weight. She's very tall for her age, and she's still growing pretty well, but not gaining weight.
Okay.
She's actually dropped a little percentage now in weight.
The 4 to 6 year old is a real problem for us. They love to complain of stomach aches. And I think the stomach ache doesn't usually mean my stomach hurts. It's often when it's time to eat, you know, I don't like what's on the table. My stomach hurts. That gets me out of it.
Well, that is part of it.
Had a troublesome day in class. I had a fight with my friend, something like that, that gives me a stomach ache. And I think as long as her weight is stable or increasing, as long as you can't measure anything, objective fever or,
no.
you know, changes in her bowel movements or anything like that, I think it's probably sort of the normal complaints of childhood that's still a, it certainly makes me concerned as a physician to write something off that way. And I'm sure it's more concerning to the parents who, and I think we have such a cancer phobia in this country that, you want to make sure it's not cancer.
Right.
And again, cancer in children is extreme. It exists, but it's extremely unusual and not probable. She says it's a knot in her stomach, so it's probably not likely to be an ulcer. Do kids get ulcers? Yes, but infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my understanding is the most common thing pediatric gastroenterologists, stomach and intestinal experts see kids for is functional constipation. So you might check, you know, you think she's having regular bowel movements, but she's sick. She takes care of herself. So you might check and make sure that she is indeed having a daily or every other day bowel movement.
Okay.
And maybe have her, I don't know, does she ever forget to flush?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So her bowel movement looks normal. It's not big, it's not hard, and that sort of stuff.
It looks normal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, if she's sniffing a lot, she could be sucking in air, swallowing air.
Yeah.
Does she tend to burp more than usual?
No.
Does she tend to pass gas the other end more than usual?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, she could be swallowing air and distending her stomach a little bit and giving her that kind of tight feeling, too. But it sounds like I'm with you. I think the nose is the place to focus on.
Uh-huh.
And I think while we're waiting for ENT, it bothers me a little bit that she snores that loudly.
Well, she always has.
Okay. Yeah. It may be that she's got an upper airway obstruction. And I think in the meantime, certainly the saline nose drops or a bit of Vaseline or something like that is certainly perfectly safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you said, did she snore every night?
Mm-hmm.
You were thinking about... If it was every night, that meant something different.
If it's every night, it's more likely to be the upper airway obstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's variable, it's more likely to be, you know, a cold or allergy or one of those intermittent recurring things.
And adenoids is what causes the obstruction?
Well, that may or may not be. Yeah, maybe enlarged adenoids. It may be another failure of the muscularity of the upper airway, but the adenoids are expendable.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't, you know, if it's a muscular problem in the roof of the nasopharynx, you can't do anything to correct that. So you take the adenoids out, and you make give them a bigger airway that way,
mm-hmm.
and you fix the problem. And this upper airway obstruction we see. Not uncommonly. In fact, it's probably the most common cause. You know, years ago, everybody had their tonsil and adenoids taken out because they were there. Now we're much more particular about it. And probably the upper airway obstruction is the most common cause of the most common indication for adenoidectomy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And often they will just do an adenoidectomy, leave the tonsils behind because... And these things are expendable, but they're probably not worth... You know, we've got some information that they're not completely worthless.
Right.
But they're expendable that way. And, gosh, I've seen kids who had terrible problems with snoring. Some of these kids are failing in school because they're not sleeping well at night because they get into the sleep apnea and keep arousing during the night. They're hard to wake up in the morning. They're just grumpy kids. They don't eat well.
Mm-hmm.
Their appetite's poor because, you know... I can't breathe through my nose,
mm-hmm.
so it's hard for me to chew because I have to breathe while I have a mouthful of food, and so I don't eat as well.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these kids, I've seen it even cure bedwetting.
Mm-hmm.
And probably what's happening there is the poor sleep at night's interfering with their arousal mechanisms. That's why they wet the bed. So you can see, if that's her problem, you may see marvelous things from an adenoidectomy.
Well, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic, and he is on the program every month. It's always a Thursday in the 10 o'clock hour, and we say if you have some concerns or questions about your children and their health and you'd like to talk them over with the doctor, you just call us, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. So you do see sleep apnea in children?
Yes. Yes, and it does tend to be more anatomical, obstructive in nature, rather than the Pickwickian syndrome you see in adults with the you know the obesity and that sort of stuff. It tends to be easily treatable, much more easily mm-hmm. treatable. A little surgical procedure. I mean, there's no surgical procedures, little, but relatively small surgical procedure. Take their adenoids out, and wow.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah. The parents are concerned the first couple of nights. They go into the child's room to make sure they're still breathing because they can't hear them anymore. and some of these kids snore so loudly that, three rooms down you'll hear them snoring at night. And they'll have these apneic pauses in their sleep, the big in and then...
Nothing.
Nothing. And then the exhale, the exaggerated exhale. The surgical procedure is very nice.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting the way things have changed on the tonsils. It probably, even 10 years ago, I'll bet, we were still taking out lots and lots of tonsils. And when I was a kid, probably that was just I don't know why. I still have mine, but a lot of my contemporaries had them out. And it seemed that what happened was we gained an increased appreciation for the fact that these things have a function, and yeah. you probably are better off to leave them there so they can do what it is they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I think I had mine out when I was 5. When I got to medical school, I was very mad at the doctor who took them out because I found out that, you know, yeah, tonsils grow and grow until about age 7. Then they kind of decrease in size. I had mine out. Most frequent indication at that time was frequent ear infections or because they were there. We used to irradiate tonsils. We used to irradiate thymuses because they were there. And then we found out that, when you irradiated the thymus, you saw thyroid cancer in these kids. So then it came to no tonsillar adenoid ought to be taken out. You know, there's absolutely no indication. And now I think the pendulum is swinging back, and we're finding out that there are indications. And again, the most common is just that they're too big and they're causing airway obstruction, upper airway obstruction. Another relative indication, and this varies depending on what you read, is recurrent strep throat. And if you have 6 or 8 cases of, 4 to 6 to 8 cases, depending, again, which expert you read, of documented strep throat. These aren't sore throats we're talking about, folks. These are
you got to do the culture and
documented strep throats. Maybe those that's probably an indication for a tonsillectomy too, to prevent rheumatic fever and keep these kids in school.
Yeah, can you actually see them? I mean, if you say to your kid, "Okay, open real wide and look in the throat,"
yeah,
can you? Maybe if you have to know what you're looking for, but yeah. Can you easily say, okay, I see them, those are them?
Yeah. Have them open real wide, and you'll see kind of at the base of the tongue, at the back of the tongue, you'll see kind of a flap of skin come down where the mouth seems to close back into the throat. Mm-hmm. And right immediately in back of that flap of skin, you'll see the tonsils back there. And tonsils will vary in size. And we don't take tonsils out. It's not like Mount Everest. You climb it because it's there. You take them out because they're there. They can be big. They can be huge. They can be what I call kissing tonsils, where the tonsils meet in the midline, and they can be smooth. They can be globular in shape. That doesn't bother me at all either. As long as the child's eating, sleeping, and all that okay, the size doesn't matter. Because they do tend to grow until about age 7 or so in size, and then they involute. And in adults, my tonsils were removed. I bet you if you compared our two throats back there, they'd look the same right now. So they do tend to involute. What are they there for? They're lymph nodes. Lymph nodes help filter things and help fight infection. They make infection-fighting cells. And when you think about the tonsils and the adenoids you can't see. They're up above the palate, the roof of the mouth. But you think about the tonsils and the adenoids, they guard against everything we eat. They guard everything against everything we eat, everything we inhale, we breathe, has to go past the tonsils and the adenoids. So they're probably good things to have, or we'd have evolved out of them. What definite information, definite data do we have that they do something? Well, people who've had their tonsils removed, there's a slight but statistically significant increase in Hodgkin's disease. Okay, I've had my tonsils taken out. Am I laying awake at night worrying about getting Hodgkin's disease? No. It's statistical only. Also, in the days of polio, people who'd had their tonsils and adenoids taken out, if they got polio, were more likely to have a more severe case of polio and develop paralysis. So we've got some bits of data that suggest that, they're not. If you need to have them removed, don't hesitate. But don't have them removed just because they're Mount Everest, just because they're there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got plenty of time here for other questions. If you'd like to talk with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek, he's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic. He's with us every month, always on a Thursday in the 10 o'clock hour, and we have put this program into the schedule, so there would be a regular chance for you to call in and ask about your children or the other children in your life. Any questions you may have, the kinds of things you'd take up with a pediatrician, you can call us. 333-WILL or 9455, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Just recently, I had a conversation with a guy who writes for The Atlantic who's written this book about the fast food industry in this country called Fast Food Nation. And it's a fascinating book for a variety of reasons. His main point is that when you start thinking about it, it's remarkable how many corners of American life fast food has gotten into. But one of the big areas of concern, obviously, is what it's doing to us in terms of determining what we think is good, what we want to eat, and then what we do eat, because obviously these meals, they're not health food. I think one of the concerns that he articulates is that human beings already, we like fat, we like sugar, we like those things. And so here now this industry has put together a meal that's essentially, that's pretty much what it is. It's fat, salt, yeah, and sugar, stuff that we already like anyway. But there is this concern that if you feed a lot of this kind of food to children, it'll set their taste for the rest of their life, and that they might even be more inclined to eat a lot of food that has fat and a lot of salt and sugar in it. You think there's something to that?
Yeah, you know, yes and no. I think, yes, we are. I think our body has its instincts. Sugar tastes good. Gee, isn't that interesting? The most amount of calories we should have comes from carbohydrates, from sugars, if you will, a good energy source. We do, and there's studies done in infants that, yeah, even little babies like sweet stuff.
You put something sweet on their tongue, they smile.
They think it's
so
good
obviously
stuff.
They say, hey, this is good.
Yeah. Fat probably ought to be, in a child, 30% of their caloric intake. In an adult, maybe 20-25% of the caloric intake should be in the form of fat. But we've looked at protein. We've looked at fat. I don't know what we've looked at carbohydrate. We haven't talked about vegetables and fiber and that sort of stuff. And I think with fast food, I have a couple of concerns about fast food. One's a nutritional concern. We are ignoring the food pyramid. We are high in protein. We are high in fat. We are low in vegetables and fruits and that sort of stuff. Because what goes along with the hamburger? French fries and a milkshake. Mm-hmm. Or French fries and a Coke. Or a soft drink. So then we worry about then the unknown about osteoporosis comes in too, because milk intake's down, calcium intake's down, that sort of stuff. Okay, we've taken a cheeseburger, but somebody who worked at Kraft told me that the cheese on a fast food hamburger is about 30% cheese, and the rest I don't know what it is. I didn't ask. I don't think I want to know. I think the other thing, kind of a psychological thing with fast food, is the family dinner's gone. The chance to sit around and talk and rehash the day and ask concerns about problems, that fellowship is gone. So I think I can't support fast foods from a nutritional basis, and I think I have trouble supporting fast foods from a social basis. And I think certainly there's times when stopping through McDonald's is a must because your day is so busy. But I think we need to be concerned about nutrition and fellowship and the family hour and that sort of thing. So we've got two reasons to be concerned about fast foods. I don't want to put McDonald's out of business. In fact, I heard on the way in here that McDonald's is expecting their profits to go down because of the beef consumption in Europe is going down because of the concern about mad cow disease. And so hooray for mad cow disease. Maybe it's... Maybe it's serving a function.
If you're a cattle producer, don't call me. Don't write me. Send your comments directly to Bob Bocek, care of Christie Clinic. Let's go on here. Vincennes, Indiana is next, line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
First, I'd like to thank you, Dr. Bocek, for all the guidance you've given me over the years in raising my own children.
Good. Thank you.
You're very welcome for the compliment. Thank you again. And now I have a question about a grandchild.
Okay.
Do you have any suggestions for getting a breastfed baby to take a bottle?
No.
I was afraid of that.
Will not take a bottle from anybody. Will not take a bottle from mom.
Does not want the bottle. Has had some in the past. Has been taking the bottle sometimes.
Okay. How old is the baby now?
Not quite 4 months.
Okay. And you're a grandmother who doesn't like to listen to this baby cry when he's left in your care.
I don't get a chance to hear him that much.
Okay. It's really tough. You get the Yeah, you get the bottle-fed babies who won't drink any other way, and you get the breast-fed babies. I guess it's addicting. Either one's addicting. I don't. There used to be a formula out that tasted a little bit sweeter, because breast milk tends to be sweeter tasting than human milk.
Well,
or than cow's milk.
She has expressed.
Yeah.
She just doesn't really want the bottle.
He doesn't like the latex. The other thing you can try is cup feeding.
Uh-huh.
And that's very popular now, to be used to supplement the breastfed babies to supposedly not get them nipple confused. Now, we can discuss that. I have my own doubts about that. But you use a little paper cup or a flexible cup, and you just kind of pour it down their mouths, slowly. To me, I have some reservations about it. It's kind of like stuffing a goose, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you might try that, although I suspect at 4 months, this child's going to say no to that, too. Is this baby on solid foods yet?
No.
Okay, because that's your other savior as a grandmother babysitter. The breast is not available. These kids will take solid foods. Usually what these kids will do is they'll take enough out of the bottle. They're not happy with it. They take enough of the bottle to keep the wolf from the door, and boy, are they glad to see mom when mom gets home. And usually mom's glad to see baby when she gets home, too. But I don't have any magic. It's really tough.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a daycare problem.
Okay.
It's a daycare, and then in the middle of the afternoon, mom gets called at work to come.
Yeah.
And they were thinking about trying to start him on a little cereal mixed with breast milk just to get him to take it from the spoon.
Yeah, it's about that. My other advice as far as starting solid foods is usually it's 4 to 5 months when they seem to need solid foods. But my advice to parents is don't do anything you don't have to do and wait till they ask. But I think this baby's going to ask pretty soon.
He's been a rampant grower.
Yeah. The other thing that sometimes works is trying different nipple shapes.
Uh-huh. And she has done that.
Okay. That's what I was afraid of. Sometimes that works. I'm sorry. I don't have any magic. These kids are tough. They're breastfed.
Mm-hmm.
They know the difference between the breast and the latex nipple, and don't want much to do with the nipple. And I think my only suggestion is cup feeding. To try that. I expect the daycare's not going to like that because that takes a significant amount of time. And I don't think a four-month-old is going to put up with it.
Uh-huh.
They're going to say, I'm 4 months old now. I'm wise. I know the difference.
Well, especially since he did take the bottle earlier, occasionally.
Yeah.
And now he's refusing it.
Yeah, he just knows the difference. He won't starve to death. I don't think any harm will be done to him at all. But, yeah, he gets kind of fussy, and the daycare providers don't like that because they're frustrated because they can't solace the baby very well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Can mom rearrange her schedule to get there at noon over her lunch hour to nurse?
She does go at noon.
Oh, okay. And then it's 3 or 4 hours later that he wants his tummy's empty again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
As you say, you're not a magician. I do appreciate your words of wisdom.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. So is it an issue of just what you're used to, or does it have something to do with the fact that breastfed babies, it's not just that they're getting food, they're getting this contact with mom, and that's really, that's what they're missing when you put this rubber thing in there, man.
I think so. I think there's a difference in taste, there's a difference in, the flesh nipple versus the rubber nipple. I think there's a difference in the delivery system, too. Where the breast tends to let down and eject the milk, so then the baby sucks a little bit, gets the breast started, and then just sits there and kind of swallows it down. Mm-hmm. And the bottle nipple, where it's a little different mechanism for them to get it out. So more active. So I think there's a variety of reasons why they'll get used to one and then continue to prefer that.
And now some I don't know how long ago somebody designed a bottle that was supposed to act and feel more like breast. But sounds like you're saying, well, you know, that might not make any difference.
I've had more trouble with that kind of bottle than any other kind of bottle for the breast of the baby. I think they suck just as much air around that bag system and that so-called naturally shaped nipple. You know, the nipple is more naturally shaped, but the delivery system is entirely different, and the kids tend not to be fooled by that very well, very much.
Okay, let's take another caller here. Aurora, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you. I was very interested in what you had to say about fast foods. I think they're the blight of America. And I don't know how you can fight it because they're always there. They're every 20 miles, so they're always there. And you spoke to socialization, and I feel it's so important, not only for the child to have an hour with family members and discuss things. I have taken to having holidays. We had a St. Valentine's Day dinner, only because I wanted all the family members that could come to come. We're having a St. Patrick's Day. We're making a big thing of these holidays so that the family, whatever members can come and partake, and there can be socialization, which I feel is so important, especially to a depressed child of a divorced mother.
Yeah, I think, and plus it introduces her to her family, her extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, and that sort of stuff. And I think, family is more than mom and dad and child, or it should, unfortunately, divorced and families moving around, it's not. I won't debate you.
And we had a birthday party for her mother at my house, and what was nice was a cousin came, a 16-year-old cousin came, who usually doesn't come. But he came because it was his aunt's birthday. And then he brought his girlfriend.
Okay.
So, you know, that was 2+ people. And that was such a great happening. But you have to make those things happen, or try to anyway.
Yes.
But what has happened, they eat supper at my house 4 nights a week. And I try to put the correct foods on, plus the foods that I know she wants to eat. You know, I've been at this for over a year, and I try, you know, whatever. But she puts obstacles. A 9-year-old will put every obstacle available, you know, to make it not happen that they eat at my house 4 nights a week. So now we're to the point where first it was one thing or another. You know, she always had an excuse. She had the excuse, now she has the excuse, that after school they go to this daycare in the school, and I don't know why they feed them so late at 4:30. By the time she eats at 5:30, she says she's not hungry because she ate up at school. And I'm sure, it's crackers and crackers, you know, that kind of thing. It's nothing substantial. And then the other thing that has come, now she has another excuse. She, as she says, how does she say that? She can't, you know, my mother lives with me, and she's 105. And, of course, she's not like she used to be at 90. And the child now doesn't want to eat at the table because of my mother. So it seems like there's been one obstacle after another. And I've tried, but this last obstacle, I can't see anything to do for it. I've got a couple of things that I've thought of, but I don't know if it's there are any solutions to this obstacle that she's putting up.
The great-grandmother?
Yeah, the great-grandmother. I'm sorry. Yeah, the great-grandmother.
Her great-grandmother, yes.
And she's only, after being here a year and a half, she only just started to call me Grandma the last 3 weeks.
You know, I think, you know, we've talked several, we've talked a lot over the years. I think you've got great insights, great instincts. I think what you're in a new situation now, aren't you?
Yes.
And I think you're doing wonderful things. I think you're making every opportunity open to her. You're introducing her to family. But we talked about grief before, and I think she probably hasn't gotten through that yet entirely. From what you say, she's getting much better. But I think you're doing fine, and I think it's a question of more time. Is she doing well in school now?
No, she's out of school every week. She's out at least one day. They wonder what's happening in the home, that this is occurring. Her mother has days off from school and days off from work, and that's a problem.
Is she getting counseling?
You know, she isn't. And whenever I can, as well as I can, I remind the mother that she needs professional help.
Yeah.
She needs to deal with these things so that she can get to a better place in other relationships.
Yeah, she's still angry, and I don't know what stage she's, but she's hung up.
I want to say this. Her one cousin, who will be 16 next week, called her up one time, and he could do this. He reprimanded her for not being kind to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he found out about it. I didn't know about it. But I thought, see, that's where, as you say, family is so important. This 16-year-old, she will hear. She won't hear me. I'm the mother of her mother. But this 16-year-old child called her up and said to her, no, he's not a child, he's 16.
No, he is and he isn't. Yeah.
And he told her. Why did, you know, he questioned her and told her not to be like that to her mother. And I thought it was wonderful. And this is exactly what children need, interaction with other young children in the family. They'll listen to them.
Often they will. You're right. I don't know how many times over the years I've had an effect. You know, sometimes it has to come out from with outside of the immediate four walls of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this child needs counseling. But we've wandered a bit away from your original question, though. And a couple of things. I think the snack she probably gets in school is probably a nutritious snack, because they're under obligation through federal rules.
Are they really?
Yeah. If it's a school-sponsored snack.
If I could, I'd go up there and see what they eat.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is dinner, the evening meal, seems to be the least important meal to a child. Big breakfast they like. Good lunch they'll eat. Dinner is often not their biggest meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a snack. And if she is getting a snack at 4:30, an hour or two later, all she needs is a smaller snack. I think if dessert is a social function within your family, I think because she doesn't eat to our satisfaction, she is still entitled to dessert. She's not entitled to doubles to make up for what she didn't eat at the table. I mean, we don't use dessert as a... Yeah,
no, she just
as a consolation.
She just is almost like adamant. She's almost like angry about it.
Yeah,
I'm not going to eat anything, and I don't say anything more. You know, I just try to let her mother handle it.
Yeah.
But I do try. You know, I know the things she likes, and I try. But. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, I think the other thing, you know, I do expect you to sit at the table for a finite period of time till we get through the blessing or, you know, whatever, so we can have a little conversation, and then you can be excused to watch TV. But I expect, you know, a reasonable amount of time, 15 minutes at the table, 10 minutes at the table. You know, maybe I'll start with 5 minutes at the table, and we'll see if you don't get into the socialization process and spend a little bit more time at the table. But you can't force it.
No. The two things that I started way at the beginning was for her to be in charge of the music. She always puts the CD on of her choice.
Okay.
And then she always lights the candles.
Okay.
Of her choice. That's all up to her. And I did tell her last week, you know, Jen, I miss you not putting the music on. I just said that. That was all I said.
I think you're doing great. I think this child needs some professional counseling because I think there's a she's hung up. She's not working through this divorce.
No, and she keeps telling her mother she wants to move back where they lived.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just not giving up. Yeah, she's not readjusting to the new reality, and I think she needs some counseling to help her through it.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
you're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. This is our regular monthly program on children's health, and our guest is Dr. Robert Bochak. He's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic. And if you have questions, call us, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have others, and our next caller is in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Hi. I have just something real quick to suggest for the previous caller
mm-hmm.
that you didn't address. And this is obviously, I don't know what her situation is, but I've encountered similar things in the past. And sometimes it's easy for kids to use eating or not eating as a form of control where they don't have control over any other part of their lives.
Yes.
You know, if her parents have been divorced and this is traumatic for
yes.
her and she feels a loss of control, the one thing she can do is decide when she will not eat. I just wanted to throw that out
yes.
for a suggestion. It's often a control issue.
Yeah, and I think, you pick your battles, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you don't fight a war that you can't win, and we can elaborate on win-win if a little later in the show if we want to. You know, and I'll hear the same thing about toilet training. You know, I'm convinced my kid's going to poop and pee on the potty. Well, that's another thing we have no control over.
Right.
So, yeah, pick your battles. And that's why I suggest with the previous caller, you know, expect her to socialize or be at the table, but don't expect her to, yeah, you can't force her to eat.
Yeah.
You can offer, you can't force her to eat.
Right. The hardest thing of all, I know, because you are concerned about their health, but I think children rarely starve themselves to death. I mean, they will eat when they need to eat.
You're absolutely right, and there's ample evidence to show that if you offer a child a diet, they will balance it out, although, you know, particularly in the preschoolers, we'll hear, you know, this kid's eating nothing but SpaghettiOs. Well, you know, you pin the parents down, and yeah, last week it was all they wanted to eat was cheese toasties or something like that, or peanut butter and jelly. So these kids, yeah, and oh yeah, did eat green beans one night last week. So these kids, yeah, don't worry about their nutrition. If you offer them a balanced diet, trust them. Chances are they will balance out their diet, and you can measure that in how fast you have to buy new clothes for them and
right.
that sort of thing.
Perhaps if the child felt more control at the table, for example, if she set the table or if she designed a centerpiece for the table, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She brought something to the meal herself.
That might work.
Feel like she has a little bit more.
It sounds like this grandmother's worked on that with having her light the candles and
yeah, yeah.
and that sort of thing. But
I wish her luck.
Okay.
Me
well,
too.
Let's go to Urbana for someone else here. Line 1. Hello.
Hi. I just had a question about, this is a 2-year-old girl.
I'm sorry.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry you have a 2-year-old.
No,
just being facetious.
Hey, sorry you have a 2-year-old.
No, I don't have a 2-year-old.
Oh, okay.
This is a 2-year-old girl, and she had a vaginal yeast infection. And my understanding was that was very rare. But apparently the doctor told the mom that it wasn't all that rare and that perhaps it was from being in the bathtub or whatever, and so they started giving her showers. Could you just talk a little bit about what the likelihood of that is?
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeast infection, we'll see Canada in yeast infections in young children, the thrush in the mouth, the yeast diaper dermatitis, the yeast diaper rashes. But you're right, a yeast yeast itself is a primary cause of a vaginitis in prepubertal children before estrogen is there, before the vagina is estrogenized, is very unusual. Having different kinds of dermatitis down there is not at all unusual, probably because this baby's still in diapers and, you know, is wet and chafed and all that sort of stuff. So seeing dermatitis is down there is not unusual, but I'm with you. Yeast infection in a prepubertal child in the vagina is not likely.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. They had said something about, she's no longer taking baths, she's taking showers now.
Yeah. Okay. I think what we do as parents that cause a lot of these vaginal erythemas and diaper rashes in our children, not intentionally. I think we do it because we are so concerned about hygiene down there that sometimes we're a little bit too hygienic.
Mm-hmm.
And the vaginal mucosa, again, in a prepubertal child is a couple of cell layers thick. It's very, very thin. The vaginal area in the prepubertal girl doesn't like soap very much. It's irritating. Doesn't like to be rubby scrubbied with a cloth. I think baths are, it doesn't like bubble baths. But I think baths are fine. Either one is fine. Actually, I think probably if she's having bottom trouble, I probably would go with a bath. Just water down there. Spread the legs. Just kind of let the water kind of irrigate things out a little bit, the sort of the postpartum sitz bath type of thing. Leave the bubbles out, minimal soap down there. The soap that strays into the tub from washing the body is not significant, but I think bath or shower is fine, and I'm with you. Gentle cleansing, teach her to pat her bottom after pottying and not rub and scrub it, and gentle cleansing. Now, if you culture a red vagina, are you going to grow candida frequently? Yes, you are, because it's normal flora in our bowel. So, yeah, we're going to grow candida in culture, but growing it doesn't necessarily, from that area where it's not sterile anyway, growing it is not proof that that's the etiology of the infection.
Oh.
Yeah, the fact that it grows there, it just happened to be there and it got the blame.
Okay, that's what I understood, that yeast is naturally in the body. It's just a matter of overgrowth or whatever?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay, and that's when it's...
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks. Let's go real quick here. Try line number 3, Champagne. Hello?
Hello. Hi. Real quick, I wonder if you have any thoughts, doctor. I have a 5.5-year-old who has some motor planning issues. His fine motor skills are... weak, shall we say. Anyway, he's been going to occupational therapy since August, and it's been going very, very well. And his fine motor is improving.
Mm-hmm.
He hates to write, though, just hates it. And we have an easel at home with a whiteboard and a chalkboard, and we set up little exercises on it for him to practice like he does with his occupational therapist. We have tons of markers and crayons and paper and all of that, but the response that we get when we suggest that we draw some pictures or practice writing his name is usually a refusal. And his teacher assures me at school that they work on his writing every day, and I see the evidence. You know, he brings home the work with him every day. But I just, you know, being a concerned parent, I want those muscles to develop as much as they can, and, you know, am I pushing it by expecting it or wanting him to practice at night when he comes home after, you know, he's had his day at school?
I hate to jump in. We don't have very much time. Can you say something?
Yeah, I've heard you say he about 12 times and him about 12 times too, and that's probably the difference. It's probably the gender difference there.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And so be patient. Don't push again. We've talked about food and that sort of stuff. Don't push again. Try and keep it fun with the connect the dots game, tracing over dots and that sort of stuff. Try and keep it fun, and he'll come around probably.
Okay.
And I'm going to have my apologies to have to jump in, but we're just at the end of the time, and we're going to have to stop. But, of course, Dr. Bocek will be back again next month. We'll do it again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Robert Bocek, he's a pediatrician at Christie Clinic in Champaign. He's with us every month on a Thursday to talk about children's health.